This is
Cyber Station USA.
I warn you, their ingenuity goes hand in hand with their technology.
I think it's fair to call this hostile territory.
For you, I'll make an exception.
What you hold in your hand is the proof of their power.
Come here. You're not hurt, right?
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Neil Haley Show's Thinking Through the Trees segment. I'm excited to welcome the program, Michael Chappie. Michael, how are you? I am so excited about my guest. Again, I guarantee our guest is going to find out so many questions that Michael will ask him that I'm sure he's been spending time researching. And I'm excited to welcome the program, celebrity Larry Hankin. Larry, thanks for calling, man. And I appreciate you stopping by today to the Neil Haley Show.
Well, thank you for inviting me. I was looking forward to it.
I'm looking forward to it. And your voice is synonymous of all these different characters. Isn't that funny, Larry? Did anyone ever say that to you? You know, your face is one. You see your face. No other actor looks like you. But then your voice, too. Has anyone ever told you that
Well,
before?
Yeah. A lot of people, I get the face thing. I understand it because a lot of the cinematographers who in the movies, they go, I got a great bone structure. That's what they say. So I agree. Okay, my face, they recognize my face. But the voice, I don't get that at all. I guess maybe I don't hear my voice that much. I mean, I see my face, but I don't get it. But they say that a lot. Oh, hey, if I, you know, call you, you know, I say hi. They, oh, hi, Larry. How did you know it was me? Like, your voice. Hi, just by saying hi. Yeah. So yeah, I've had that.
That's awesome, and that's a cool thing. And it's funny, when I called you, and now I hear you on this call compared to when I called you on my cell driving to introduce myself. You sound so much. I'm like, no, wow.
I started off as a stand-up comedian in 1960 as a kid, and I was opening for like Woody Allen and Miles Davis and the Kingston Trio and Blues Project and 11 Spoonful, and I was doing great as a stand-up comedian. But again, I was doing blue material. I was talking about drugs, sex, and rock and roll. Back in the 60s, you were arrested for that.
Yeah, I remember the
and
story.
And I was
yeah.
pulled off the stage by cops many times. And so I finally just gave it up because I said, I'm not Lenny Bruce, you know. I'm not doing hard drugs, you know, yet.
Yeah.
So, but they were pulling me off the stage in Washington University back in St. Louis, Missouri. Yeah, it was just ridiculous. People were coming at me with bottles. Quit. Beer bottles and an upside down beer bottles in their fists. Get off the stage. You want to hear Kingston Trio?
Wow.
Whoa, man.
Oh, yeah, I can't believe you're mentioning Kingston Trio, Larry. I interviewed somebody that's restarted the band Kingston Trio, and I had him on my show a couple weeks ago. So that's a funny point you brought up.
Connection, yeah.
Yeah, connection. So, Larry, I wanted to talk about, were you in that CNN special with the comedy talking about all that stuff? Did they get points from you on that or not? When they talked about,
CNN. Talking to who?
CNN. Remember when CNN did the whole comedy series and talked about?
Yeah, no, I wasn't part of that, was I? I mean, I never heard about that.
No, I watched it. I just was wondering because you have a good story about. So when you were a comedian at that time, you were afraid they'd pull you off stage and arrest you for certain things. This is before the Richard Pryor.
No, it wasn't. I wasn't afraid of being pulled off stage or being arrested. I just didn't like it. It's a right. effing drag, man, in the middle of, you know, one of your funny things, which is, you know, blue, you know, and all of a sudden there's this phalanx of cops, 10 cops on each aisle. It was like an arena. It was a rock and roll show. And here they come marching down and up on the stage, and they pulled me off the stage. Well, they were very polite about it. Okay, let's, you know, they just took one arm on each side and said, let's go off stage. And they just marched me off stage, backstage. They didn't do anything. They just stood there. And then there was like 20 cops. And to pull one filthy-mouthed comedian off of the stage, they got me backstage. And then 18 split, and two of them just waited. until the Lovin' Spoonful got set up and started playing. And I said, why are you standing here next to me? And they said, well, we can't let you go back on stage until Lovin' Spoonful starts playing. So then when they started playing, they just split. So they just left me there. But it was like a drag. And also, the reason that the cops were called in the first place was because, you know, this was a rock and roll show. It was the Lovin' Spoonful. It was Washington University, so it was all college kids. And as soon as I got into the blue material, you know, I have clean material, blue material. So as soon as I started talking about sex and God and religion, you know, all in one little hunk, they started booing. We don't want to hear that. And, you know, I didn't know it was a religious school. I don't think it was. But there were college students, and they were booing me. And so I talked to them. I said, hey, you know, this is funny stuff. You know, you were laughing all along, and now all of a sudden – so, you know, I'm going to continue. Okay. So I started again with the sex, drugs, and, you know, rock and roll. And they started, you know, the arenas and the old movie theaters, they had these wooden armrests that yes. were on the steel, you know, legs of the chair. You could knock those armrests off. I used to do it all the time in high school. So you could knock those wooden armrests off. So these kids at St. Louis University, Washington University, they started pulling off the armrests, these wooden armrests, and throwing them at me when I talked about God and religion. And they're throwing them at me from the first and second rows, and they're throwing at me. And that's when, you know, an 11 spoonful off in the wings going, yeah, do your dirty stuff, do the sex. I said, no. So I stopped them, and I said, the throwing. I said, okay, I'll do clean material. So they stopped throwing them. And then about 10 minutes later, when I had them back, they came back right away. They were laughing along with the good stuff, the clean stuff. So I said, okay, now I'm going to talk about religion again. And they got so PO'd at me that the guys in the back, no girls were throwing these things, uh-huh. but the guys in the back were pulling off their wooden armrests and sending them down to the guys in the first and second row because they had thrown all their armrests up on stage already. So they were forwarding them down. And that's when the first time I stopped and said, okay, I'll do the clean stuff when they were throwing the things. That's when the dean who was sitting in the back called the cops in the beginning. I mean, he called them right away. As soon as they started throwing stuff, he called the cops, and it took him about 10 minutes till I got the crowd back and I did clean stuff. So when I started doing the dirty stuff again, the cops arrived and came down and pulled me off the stage. And then when I was in Boston and doing a nightclub opening for the Kingston Trio, it was just a dance floor. It was a nightclub. You know, the bandstand is only about 5 inches above the dance floor.
Right.
So I couldn't see it, and it was a snowstorm. I couldn't see out into the audience. So, you know, it's just black. It's a, you know, flat, empty dance floor, and then just black out there. But there was only about 20 people in the audience. It was a snowstorm. And I was doing my usual drug, sex, and rock and roll. And I hear this one guy go, hey, bring on a Kingston Trio. And I go, no, let me just finish my thing. And I'm going on and on. There's a few laughs, you know, it's 20 people. But I was, you know, doing fine. And all of a sudden, you hear again, we don't want to hear that stuff. Bring on the Kingston Trio. I go, yeah, well, okay. But I just kept on going. And then this guy, this looked like a lumberjack man in a suit, you know, dressed well because it was a date night or something. I don't know. But he's coming towards me across the dance floor, and he's got an upside-down beer bottle in his fist. And he's saying to me as he's walking across his dance floor, get the F off the stage. We're here to bring the Kingston Trio. And I said, okay, fine. And I just got off the stage and I walked over to the bar. And I sat there, and he's just standing on the dance floor making sure that I sat down. And then he went back out into the blackness. And the bartender comes over to me and says, hey, what are you doing here? And I said, well, did you see that guy, man? He came out with a beer bottle. He said, yeah. I said, well, I'm not going to go back out there. He's going to come out. He's going to hit me with that thing. He says, well, you still have 10 minutes. Get back out there. The Kingston Trio isn't coming on until 20 minutes. You got to fill the time. So I said, no, man, I'm not going out there until you, you know, arrest that guy or tell him to stop or block him. He says, no. I said, well, where's the bouncer, man? He says, I'm the bouncer. I said, well, I'm not going out there until you do something about that guy. So he said, if you don't go out there, you're fired. So I said, okay, see ya. And I just walked out of the club, you know, very adamant, very righteous, into a snowstorm. So I had to come back in the club and make a phone call and, you know, and call a cab. And I just left. I called my manager. I said, hey, man. You know, it was Woody Allen's manager. We had the same manager. I was opening for Woody Allen at the same time in other clubs. So it wasn't like I'm, you know, an amateur. I was doing well with his crowds. And but he was always, he did clean stuff. He did television material. I didn't have television material. That's what they wanted. Now, television material, you can't get on television if you're not blue. You know, if you're not doing what I was pulled off the stage for. But that was the 60s, man. It was weird.
Definitely. All right, go ahead, Michael, with your next question for Larry.
So you are in one of my favorite, well, my father's all-time favorite movies, Escape from Alcatraz.
Oh, yeah, that was terrific. That was great. That was great, man.
Yeah. I have to know, how was Clint Eastwood?
Well, okay, that's the thing about it. It's great working with Clint Eastwood because I got to tell you, man, he was learning how to direct on Escape from Alcatraz. So I was watching him, you know, all those great movies that he directed years and years later. And now he was learning on that. I mean, he would direct a scene or two and Don Siegel, who was the director, an old guy, but great guy. I hung around with Don Siegel, not Clint Eastwood, because it was great. Eastwood is a great actor to be in a scene with. He's really giving. I mean, he doesn't try to top you. What he does is, and I learned this from him doing those, is he rides on your energy, not on his. If you're in a scene with him, you don't think he's working at all.
Right.
You're just talking to this guy, this older guy. That's all. It's not like acting at all. And then when you look at the, you know, and he's making you look good. I think, I didn't ask him this, but that's the conclusion I came to. He was trying to make me look great. He was trying to help me. And by helping me, he was riding my energy. That's the kind of sense I got. I've never gotten that from any other actor, you know, star, because I worked with a lot of them. But it was, so that was great. But I worked. I just hung around Don Siegel because he was massive. I mean, I knew he was a genius in front. See, Clint Eastwood, I didn't realize it until I started watching his movies. And then I go, whoa, this guy knows what he's doing, man. But Don, I recognized right away. So I just followed him around like a puppy. I remember he came over to me one time. I mean, he was always putting me on because I was so naive. Like he would say, I would always ask him questions like, you know, why did you put the camera here? I thought it was over. And he would say, I don't know, Larry. I could be fired for this. You know, I'm going to just try it. I mean, that's what he would always evade the direct answer. Like one time I was playing cards and he was, cause I had a long time to wait before my scene. The great thing was, being on Alcatraz Island, that was fantastic.
Oh, yeah,
man.
I'm sure.
Because I had a lot of time, so I would wander around to other parts of the prison where, you know, they weren't shooting the movie. I'd go downstairs where the Indians, you know, took over and lived on that island for a couple of years or a couple of months anyway. That was downstairs under the prison. There's
We have before us the opportunity to forge a new world order.
There is a man behind the curtain. This isn't the Wizard of Oz. The shake-up to the music business machine.
That sounds fun!
This is a far more deadly predator than anyone ever imagined.
Perfectly designed.
I wonder which came first.
Cyrus Mission USA.
Cyber Station USA is the future of radio. Get your business into the online future at the world's largest internet radio station. From banner placement on our homepage to any of our broadcaster stages, commercials on our video player, audio spots on any of our shows, or at the beginning of any of our on-demand broadcasts. Cyber Station USA offers competitive rates with a worldwide reach, a fully integrated one-stop shop social media broadcast platform. For more information, please contact our sales department at cameo@cyberstationusa.com.
Cameo Entertainment Group and CyberStation USA are now part of Stitcher, a free radio app for your smartphone. With Stitcher, you can listen to live programming as well as archive radio programming right on your phone. To obtain Stitcher, just go to the App Store for your particular phone. Go to search, then type in Stitcher. That's Stitcher. S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
Then download. It's that simple.
Stitcher,
a free radio app for your smartphone. Convenient access to live and archive CyberStation USA programming on your mobile phone. That's Stitcher.
S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
CyberStation USA, always on the go.
Every so often you have technology come along that rewrite the rules of the game.
Digital culture isn't characterized by the home computer.
You speak instantly to a man standing on the shore of France.
The CyberStation, the USA, the .com.
Worldwide. Everything has changed.
A new age.
The biggest ride in all of history.
This is CyberStationUSA.com.
Worldwide.
This is the future.
The future.
Radio.
The future.
The future of radio.
And that really is the message.
And there's where the Indians stayed, and there was fires that they built down there. There's paintings on the walls that they painted and stuff. It was really a great trip. But one time I was playing cards with the crew because I had a long time to wait, and they look up and there's somebody standing behind me, and I look back and it's Don Siegel, and he says, "What are you doing, Larry?" I mean, he's very concerned. And they go, "Oh, well, I'm just playing cards. I'm not up for about 2 or 3 hours." He goes, "You know what scene is it is?" I go, "Yeah." He says, "You know, you got to cry in that scene." It was a scene right where they go over the – they were just about to break out, and they had left me behind. And I'm all alone in my cell, and I'm crying because they had left me behind. I for some reason, I couldn't pick out the things that we made to climb out the cell through the – air conditioner or whatever that thing was, but I couldn't get out of myself. So I was sitting there alone, crying, and it was just me. And he says, "You know, you got to cry in a couple hours." I go, "Yeah." He says, "You're not preparing."
Oh my gosh.
I go, "No," and I was just totally confused. This is the first time. Can you compare? Now, I'm not an actor. I'm a stand-up comedian. I will always be a stand-up comedian, even when I'm acting. I'm stand-up. So I don't know about crying. I'm just saying, yeah, sure. You know, that's great. If they ask you a question, yeah, sure. So he says, "You're going to cry in a couple of hours?" "Yeah, sure." "Well, okay." And he's like shrugs and he goes, "Well, but, you know, if I were you, I'd be rehearsing, you know, just getting those tears ready."
Oh my gosh.
Thinking, what's going on? Yeah. And the guys are just staring. They, you know, they got their cards in their hands and they're staring at this. And they go, "Okay." And then he walks away. Don walks away. So I go to the guys. I say, "Look, guys, I'm out. I got to do this. I don't know what the hell's going on. I'm going to go to my dressing room and rehearse." So now I knew I couldn't cry. I mean, I knew it. I mean, I don't know how to do that kind of emotional sense memory.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, I mean,
not,
that's ridiculous.
You're not,
I'm a stand-up comedian.
Exactly. Now, Larry, thinking about specifically all the characters you've played, and Michael's going to have certain questions, but thinking about all the characters you've played, what do you think you're known most for?
Which one do you think I'm going to be remembered most for, or the one that I like best?
No, the one you're remembered most for.
The ones I remember what for?
No, the one you that people remember most for. That's
that. Mm-hmm. Well, it's got to be Mr. Heckles, I guess. Second is Tom Pepper from Seinfeld, the guy who stole the raisins.
Right.
And then Old Joe from Breaking Bad and El Camino. And then it's a crapshoot from there on. Then the rest of them are all kind of equal. But I guess Mr. Echo. If I can, I mean, I'm starting to get a Steve Reeves thing going. You know, the Superman thing.
Uh-huh.
I'm waiting for somebody to not know who Mr. Heckles was, and I'll know I've made it. I've made it out of that character. I mean, that character just is. When I go anywhere in the world, somebody knows Mr. Heckles. It's crazy, man.
It's your voice.
I guess that's show business.
All right, go ahead, Michael, your next question.
Well, for me, you're going to always be known as Charlie Butts, but that's just me.
Charlie Butts? Well, that's great. Yeah, Charlie Butts is a distant third. Yeah. Yeah, I guess so. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's a good choice.
I guess that would be the first. Well, actually, the first movie I ever seen you in was The Jerk.
But I wanted a bigger part.
Right.
You know, we were all in the committee, and I thought, listen, if I'm going to be in a movie with Steve, you know, I got to have a bigger part. So I kind of dismissed that movie as, and I think I even had a bigger part and they cut it out. So I was really miffed about that whole episode.
Okay, that's what I was like, wow, this, he's a comedian, he's fun, and this would be a perfect movie.
Oh, and yeah? I tell you the other one, the fourth one is Doobie from Trains, Planes, and Automobiles.
Oh, yes. But Larry, every character you're in is unforgettable.
Right.
Well, yeah, and the interesting thing, and I can't figure it out. I mean, it's something I don't know. I really don't know. But yes, that is true. But I watch myself in the movies after it comes out, and then I forget about it. You know, but I do watch all of it at least once, just to, you know, maybe learn something. And the thing is that in 99% of the roles I'm in, I'm actually only on screen for less than a minute. I mean, if you time me with a stopwatch of from the time I'm cut in, you know, okay, there he is now. He's on screen and now he's off screen, you know, stop the watch. And just total that up, which I've done because it's really interesting. You know, my salary is a character actor's salary. That's fine. It's good. It's enough. It's a little more than, you know, another actor maybe, but it's not anywhere near what the leads get.
No.
Okay, but if I time it just by the time I'm actually in the movie on the screen, and I then divide that into my pay scale for that particular movie, I'm getting about $1 million a minute. I mean, it's just amazing how little time I'm on screen for the payment that I get. I mean, it's a normal payment. It's just, it's kind of like, what do you call it? You know, like
mind-boggling.
Regular, right. You know, just regular union scale.
And you just hang out, Larry, on the set the whole time, have the most memorable thing. And there are other people who have a lot more lines they have to remember. And they remember you from that movie or show. So that's a cool thing, right?
Oh, it's totally cool. It's totally cool because then, well, see, here's the secret to that. I mean, there's a reason for it, and it's pretty much on me. I have a fairly serious ADHD, which, you know, I can control it. I mean, I've had it all my life, so I deal with it. So it's fine. But I have that, and I also am dyslexic, which I've had all my life. So, and I can deal with that, but you have to deal with it. Okay. One of the things that it causes, those in combination, is it's really difficult for me to memorize things in a linear fashion, which is what you do when you get a script. You memorize the lines. And that becomes very difficult for me. So I have to have the script sent to me first. Like when the stars get it, I get it. Not because of my standing; it's because of my challenges. So they send me the script very early, and then I can do it. It just takes me 3 days instead of 1 day. It's fine. So I deal with it. But I tend to choose roles that doesn't have that don't have much memorization. So that's on me. In other words, if the role even has like long speeches and stuff, then I pretty much will turn it down, unless there's something that's like the salary is incredible, or the role just has maybe one of those and the rest are small lines and stuff, and so I can do it. It's a time thing. If you give me too many lines, then it takes me, you know, like a week or longer. So I have to judge by that. So it's mainly me that causes that. But on the other hand, I don't have much to memorize. I'll tell you a thing about that with Breaking Bad. I auditioned for Breaking Bad and I only had five lines the first time. I was in the third show, I think, of the second year. And it's my favorite show. It was my favorite show when I was, you know, when it was came out. Yeah. So when I got the call to say, hey, you've got an audition for Breaking Bad, I was ecstatic, man, because that's a different thing. To have a job is one thing, but to be in something you're a fan of, I was a total fan of it. That was like great. So I go in and I audition, and it was a small audition. I mean, nobody else was there. It was just an aide and a camera on a tripod, and it was just me. And she says, well, you know, you want to talk about it? No, I don't like to talk about anything. I just like to do it. So she says, you want to talk about it? No. I want to say, where's the director? Where's the casting people? I want to be seen. But, you know, they had the camera. They're going to see it. So I knew that. But she was reading in her five lines, you know, in answer to me. She was reading. She says, I'll read with you. She was reading off the script. So she was looking down all the time. So that's kind of awkward because you're not, you know, there's no relationship going. So, but I figured, well, the camera's on me. Okay.
Yes.
So I do it. And I go, it's five lines. Boom, boom, boom. Okay. She says, thank you. And I go, you want me to do it again? And she says, oh, well, do you want to do it again? And I go, well, if you want me to do it again, she says, well, if you want to do it again, then we can do it again, but I don't need you to do it again. And I said, well, if you don't need me to do it again, I'm leaving. And I just walked out.
Yeah.
And then I get a call the next day. It says, you've got the job. Holy cow. I go to the set. They fly me down in New Mexico. I get out in the middle of the desert. I get in this costume, which is all thick and, you know, workman, you know, garage mechanic stuff. And it's in the desert and I'm sweating. I go into my dressing room and there's my part. And generally, they put it on your dressing table, five lines. No, there's a full page speech on my dressing room. Now, I've just told you I'm dyslexic and I have ADHD. And I saw a full page speech. And I freak out and I go, I mean, I really do. I get really nervous if things aren't going my way and I know this is beyond my ken. I mean, I'm dyslexic. That's impossible. So I say to the AD who led me in there, I said, you know, what's going on? What is this? He said, well, Vince thought he liked your audition so much that he had them write you a speech. I go, no, you don't understand. I can't. How long do I have? He says, it's 2 hours. And you're going to shoot this in 2 hours. I go, no, I can't. I like totally freaked out so much that he wanted to get out of there. He didn't know what was going on. He's just, you know, here's this actor going nuts in his dressing room. So he left. So I tried to memorize it and I couldn't. I mean, I just couldn't. I really tried, but I know my capacity. I need the time. So I found him. I go out and I find him. I say, look, I need to talk to Vince. I got to talk to him. Vince isn't here. Oh man. Goodness. So I go back to the dressing room. I tried. No. And then he comes in. He says, okay, you're up. You're shooting. So I go out and I don't know if you remember the scene, if you've even seen the scene, but it's in the middle of the desert and it's just walking and talking. So I figured, you know, desperation comes up with ideas. I go up to the director and I say, look, can we shoot this in pieces? You know, break it up. He goes, no, it's just going to be a walk and talk. You get down there, way down, and walk towards the camera. You're about 50 feet away, and walk slowly towards the camera and do the whole speech in one thing. And I just go, okay. And I know I can't. It's impossible, but I'm not going to argue. I'm not going to say anything. I'm just going to – I'll improvise it. Maybe that – you know, I was in Second City. Maybe it'll work. Or maybe I know it, and I don't know I know it. And the pressure will make it come out right. So I get down there, he goes, okay, action, and I'm walking and I'm talking. I know I memorized the first line. I know that. So I got to say the first line, and then I'm talking, you know, and it had to be legalese, because I had to talk to the cop about why it was unlawful for him to go into the Winnebago where Paul and Brian were hiding.
We have before us the opportunity to forge a new world order.
There is a man behind the curtain. This isn't the Wizard of Oz. The shakeup to the music business machine.
That sounds fun!
This is a far more deadly predator than anyone ever imagined.
Perfectly designed.
I wonder which came first.
CyberStation USA.
CyberStation USA is the future of radio. Get your business into the online future at the world's largest internet radio station. From banner placement on our homepage to any of our broadcaster stages, commercials on our video player, audio spots on any of our shows, or at the beginning of any of our on-demand broadcasts. CyberStation USA offers competitive rates with a worldwide reach, a fully integrated one-stop shop social media broadcast platform. For more information, please contact our sales department at cameo@cyberstationusa.com.
Cameo Entertainment Group and CyberStation USA are now part of Stitcher, a free radio app for your smartphone. With Stitcher, you can listen to live programming as well as archive radio programming right on your phone. To obtain Stitcher, just go to the App Store for your particular phone. Go to search, then type in Stitcher. That's Stitcher. S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
Then download. It's that simple.
Stitcher,
a free radio app for your smartphone. Convenient access to live and archive CyberStation USA programming on your mobile phone. That's Stitcher.
S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
CyberStation USA. Always on the go.
Every so often you have technology come along that rewrite the rules of the game.
Digital culture isn't characterized by the home computer.
You speak instantly to a man standing on the shore of France.
The CyberStation, the USA, the .com.
Worldwide.
Everything has changed.
A new age.
The biggest ride in all of history.
This is CyberStationUSA.com.
Worldwide.
This is the future.
The future.
Radio.
The future.
The future.
The future of radio.
And that really is the message.
And we're hiding. So it was very important for me to have all these legal arguments for the cops. We won't go in there. So I'm just making up legalese and trying to remember my lines and walking and talking. I finally get down and I'm thinking, well, I'm going to be fired. Okay. So I'm cooling myself down. No pressure. It's just a job. I get to the end and the director says, okay, that's good. Let's just do one more take. Like, what? Did I just memorize that whole thing? That's me. He didn't mention anything. He just said, let's do it again. Okay, oh, so now I'm relaxed. I'm going, oh, great. Now he's got it in the can. I can screw up now, but I don't want to, but okay, fine. So I go back. I get back down there 50 feet away, and I see the script girl coming towards me. The script girl is a woman who is in charge of having you say the words that are written in the script. That's why she's called the script girl.
Right.
So she's coming towards me, and that's a bad sign. Because if she's walking towards you, then she's going to tell you what you didn't say right. So as she's coming towards me, I'm saying, I said to her, I said, okay, what didn't I say right? And she comes and she shows me the script, and it's every other word is circled. And I go, well, I got the gist, right? And she says, the director wants you to say it verbatim as written. And she's very adamant about it. Oh, and I go, okay, yeah. I said, okay, fine. I say, all right, fine. I'm definitely fired. Okay. But I'm not saying anything. I'm just very calm. And the director yells, hey, Larry, anything wrong? I go, no, it's okay. Let's just shoot it. And I'm just preparing myself to be fired. So I'm not even thinking about what's going on immediately in the now. I'm thinking, all right, I'll just go back. I'll tell my friends. It'll be cool.
Exactly.
And he goes, okay, then. And then he starts walking towards me with the book. It gets to me, and the cinematographer yells from the camera. He says, hey, Sid, don't you want to be by the camera? And he says, with his open book in his hand, he goes, no, I'm going to walk with my actor. And then he says, where am I out of frame? It's about 4 feet away from me. It's like, oh, man, don't do this. I'm thinking, oh, she's now I'm a baby. Yeah, I said, oh, man, he's just going to walk with me and feed me lines. This is so embarrassing. All right, fine, but I'm going to be fired anyway, so it doesn't matter. Okay, so I start walking and talking, and he's walking with me, you know, just out of camera range. Just he's walking, I'm walking, I'm talking, I'm trying to do it right. I get to the end, and he closes his book, and he says, thank you, Larry, moving on. And he just, they broke it down, and he says, Larry's dismissed. And they took me to my Winnebago, and they took me home. So I didn't know what the hell was going on. I thought, am I a genius? What the hell's going on? Did I do it twice exactly perfect? And so I watched it. Now, if you watch it, what happened was I think the director knew that I didn't have it memorized at all from about the first 5 seconds of me walking in the first take. You go, okay, he doesn't have it memorized at all. But I was improvising a lot of what was in the speech, but in different orders, and a lot of legalese that I just picked up along the way because I'm an improvisational actor, stand-up comedian. And so when I watched the show, what he did was, and it was so beautiful, you start on me with my first line, which is correct. Then he cuts to the cop. Then he cuts into the Winnebago of them talking back and forth. Then he cuts to the cop. Then he cuts to back to me because I got another line right. Then he cuts to the cop, back into the Winnebago, cop, Winnebago, cop, Winnebago, me, because I said an interesting improvised line. And then the scene ends with just a shot on me. And what he did was all the rest of the time, my voice was voice over. You know, the shots of in the Winnebago and the cop. And what he did was he edited together, he cobbled together a speech from all the improvisational, you know, blah, blah, blah legalese that I was spewing out. And he made a very competent argument out of it. And put it in voiceover so you didn't see all the edits. And just cut to me when I said something interesting, which I think was 3 times. So I'm on screen for 10 seconds.
Oh, my gosh.
But, yeah, when I asked my friends to watch it because I wanted, you know, verification of what the conclusion, I asked them, what did you see when you saw that scene? He said, well, you were walking and talking and telling the cop he can't go into the Winnebago. I said, yeah, but. You know, how long was I on screen? And they went, well, I don't know, pretty much the whole time.
Right. Okay.
No, man. No. Oh, but gosh. That's how brilliant movies is.
That's crazy.
It's so brilliant.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, Larry, I want last thing. We are running out of time, but we can. The thing that all your fans, we're going to have a part 2, a part 3. We could have 100 parts. Well, I'll definitely talk to your team about getting you back on to talk more because there's so many more questions we have. But,
oh, yeah.
But Larry, yes, where can we purchase your book right now? Let's go to your website, right? You have a book out.
Oh, that's incredible.
Yeah,
so thank you.
So tell
us. Yeah, it's a great book. You should get it. It's just for you guys and girls. It's I didn't write it for me. I wrote it for you. It's stories and stuff in my head that I've collected, and it's a collection of stories. It's called The Loopholes, plural, Dossier, D-O-S-S-I-E-R. I think Dossier, D-O-S-S-I-E-R. The Loopholes Dossier, and you can get it on Amazon.com. You can get it in ebook for $2.99. Or you can get it in a hardcover for more. But let me just say one more thing. You can get it anywhere you can buy a book, you know, or order it. You can buy it online or anywhere. But Barnes & Noble, it's all over the world for sale. Okay, yeah.
All right, Larry, thanks for calling. And, Michael, I wish you had more questions, but we're going to have a part 2. Trust me.
Yeah, okay, thank you, guys.
And all that stuff, Larry. So appreciate you calling, man.
Okay, cool, man. Bye.
All right, bye-bye. All right, that was the Thinking Through the Trees segment, guys. Take care, everyone.
Stories. I mean, the parallels to the mysterious HIV or AIDS virus. Okay, AIDS was just a subset of HIV, but anyway, the parallels and the the characteristics are striking, which I document in my book, The Un-American Genocidal Complex. If you read that, what went on with the AIDS virus and what's going on here with the lies and the, you know, in terms of the AIDS virus, they're saying with some green monkey bit some African on the butt or something in the middle of the jungle, and all of a sudden, you know, whammo, you had AIDS all over Africa, and at the same exact time, pretty much, you had AIDS in the specific homosexual population in five specific cities here in the United States. So the epidemiology made no sense. I'm talking about AIDS, okay, and source, and I did all the research, okay, and it just, it made no sense what the government, the quote government, the World Health Organization, all these lying organizations, and I mean the United States government, you know, weapons of mass destruction, United States government also, which just wasn't true, and it did not take a tremendous amount of research to come to that conclusion, okay, because the media. And everybody was saying, oh, it was a green monkey, it was in Africa. But when I did my research, you know, and I'm no brain surgeon, you know, civil engineering. I wasn't, took microbiology as a part of my undergraduate program. And anyway, I went and I did some research, and nothing in the scientific research. Now, I'm just talking normal scientific journals, Lancet, Science, Journal of the American Medical Association. I went to all these sources,
right,
and they were all saying that the AIDS, the family of viruses, you know, known as HIV, came from a combination of sheep visnum virus, what was called, and bovine leukemia virus. Okay, and they were, I think it was T cell leukemia virus. It was HTLV 1 through 5. And they were different combinations of sheep and bovine viruses. I mean, for all intents and purposes, I mean, okay, there's a lot of time to go through it. But anyway, the point is, there's no way the genetic markers did not come from a green monkey. Okay, and I'm no expert microbiologist, but you don't have to be, just, you know, to read through this stuff. But anyway, you know, transpose that to today and what's going on with this coronavirus, and it's the same exact thing. And in fact, I've been reading a couple of different stories. Of course, you don't get this on the mainstream news. You're not going to hear this on Fox and the other so-called mainstream news, but if you go and you do a little bit of research, and Zero Hedge, I think, is one of them, and he usually does very good economic articles, but apparently got banned for Twitter for daring to say that there was many genetic markers from the HIV virus in this coronavirus. So the point is that somebody's, I don't know, use the word playing around, because we're not really playing, we're talking about mass deaths, but somebody is manipulating viruses in the lab once again, and this got out, whether it's accidentally or on purpose. You know, my conclusion was the AIDS virus was distributed on purpose for the effect of genocide and population control. Per the Georgia Guidestone, shown on the front cover of the Un-American Genocidal Complex, right, brought to us by Robert Christian, who's just so happens to align with the Beast of Revelation 13. But I know I just said a lot in a mouthful. But anyway, let's back to the point. This is all covered in the Un-American Genocidal Complex, by the way. But anyway, the point is, it's the same exact pattern. It's the same exact lines of crap, okay? And in this case, it apparently it's the same genetic sequence, you know, that we saw in the HIV virus, wow, that we're seeing in this coronavirus.
That's crazy, so, man. It's crazy.
This is getting out of hand. And this is why I'm saying, you know, again, just getting back to who's behind this, you know, this is why I have very little patience at times. You know, maybe it appears I'm being a little too harsh on many of these prophets of God, these so-called Christian pastors and their comic book Antichrist and all this other kind of nonsense. This is a lot more serious. Okay, when you start talking about the distribution and the production of genetically altered and created viruses that are made to adapt, that are adapted to humans. Okay, these are animal viruses, and it's rare. It's not unheard of, but it's rare that animal viruses, you know, jump from species. You know, viruses are generally host specific. Of course, there are exceptions, rabies virus and this sort of thing, and that's fine. But, you know, again, in the case of AIDS, there was never a situation where you had cow and sheep viruses in humans, and all of a sudden, boom, whammo, you had five different varieties all happening at the same time with epidemiology made no sense. And now there's apparently some connections between that and this current coronavirus. So, you know, again, the people behind this and the person, again, the mysterious Robert Christian, they're just much more, it's much more evil. It's much more pervasive. It's much more real than some comic book antichrist, you know, running around, you know, some temple in Jerusalem.
Exactly.
You know, zapping people with, you know, with you know, with lightning bolts and, you know, sticking their foreheads with, you know, microchips and all this sort of thing. I'm not saying, you know, there's going to be some kind of economic collapse as part of this, but it's a very minor part of the big picture. This is evil. Okay. This is evil, like literally on a biblical scale. Okay. So when I say the un-American genocidal complex, it's not meant to be taken lightly. It's not meant as a joke. It's not meant to be taken figuratively. I mean, the United Nations, the World Health Organization, the CDC, and many world governments are in on this. The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, okay, and I'm reading in several articles, they have patents on viruses and it's all kinds of stuff you can do research on, patents on vaccines to these viruses, and all of a sudden these viruses start popping out and killing people. And people are like, oh, that's crazy. That'll never happen. And how can that's possible? And conspiracy theorists and all this. And, you know, my response to that is, let's just start with the abortion movement, okay, in this nation, okay? We're north of 60 million babies, okay? And in the case of Virginia, the state of Virginia and the state of New York now, live babies. It's okay for live babies if the mother decides, well, to take it out and let's let it die on its own.
We have before us the opportunity to forge a new world order.
There is a man behind the curtain. This isn't the Wizard of Oz. The shakeup to the music business machine.
That sounds fun!
This is a far more deadly predator than anyone ever imagined.
Perfectly designed.
I wonder which came first.
CyberStation USA.
CyberStation USA is the future of radio. Get your business into the online future at the world's largest internet radio station. From banner placement on our homepage to any of our broadcaster stages, commercials on our video player, audio spots on any of our shows, or at the beginning of any of our on-demand broadcasts. CyberStation USA offers competitive rates with a worldwide reach, a fully integrated one-stop shop social media broadcast platform. For more information, please contact our sales department at cameo@cyberstationusa.com.
Cameo Entertainment Group and CyberStation USA are now part of Stitcher, a free radio app for your smartphone. With Stitcher, you can listen to live programming as well as archive radio programming right on your phone. To obtain Stitcher, just go to the App Store for your particular phone. Go to search, then type in Stitcher. That's Stitcher. S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
Then download. It's that simple.
Stitcher,
a free radio app for your smartphone. Convenient access to live and archive CyberStation USA programming on your mobile phone. That's Stitcher.
S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
CyberStation USA. Always on the go.
Every so often you have technology come along that rewrite the rules of the game.
Digital culture isn't characterized by the home computer.
You speak instantly to a man standing on the shore of France.
The CyberStation, the USA, the .com.
Worldwide.
Everything has changed.
A new age.
The biggest ride in all of history.
This is CyberStationUSA.com.
Worldwide.
This is the future.
The future.
Radio.
The future.
The future.
The future of radio.
And that really is the message.
On its own, that is now acceptable and, in fact, a quote right here in these very United States. So you can't say that the mindset to produce and disseminate something like this is not there. And there's no argument that the technology to be doing this and screwing around with these viruses has been around for my research almost 50 years. Okay, going back to the 1960s
and
polio vaccine and all that. And again, that's covered in the un-American genocidal complex. Which, by the way, is fully footnoted and there's bibliography in there and there's government documents, okay, in the appendix of that, the one from 1994. And basically, the Department of Defense admits that they've been experimenting on American people during World War II and the Cold War. And they openly say in the document, which is in the book, they don't know the extent of these experiments. They don't know how many people were harmed and how they were harmed. And this is government records, okay? I'm not just pulling this stuff.
Right? No, I know. I hear you. I mean, this is and then interestingly talk about this. So, what about this virus now? You definitely don't. You think this is a man-made virus?
Oh, there's a preponderance of evidence out there that's saying yes. There's no way the genetic markers and the similarities to other viruses and the epidemiology.
How dangerous do you think it is?
That I don't know. And again, I don't profess to be an epidemiologist or microbiologist, but if the news reports that are able to make it out of China are anywhere near accurate, it's very contagious and very lethal. All right. And it's and they're trying to contain it, as apparently seems to be so far a losing effort. Okay. Now, I'm not guaranteeing, or I'm not saying this is going to be it. This is the next Black Plague. But the pattern is there. And who knows? Once you go deep enough into this, into the rabbit hole, and I'll go into the rabbit hole to an extent, but at some point you're in an abyss. It's like trying to solve the Kennedy assassination or something. You get to a point where it's just like, all right, I've gone far enough. I have enough evidence for my conclusions. Let me come back out and I guess spread the light of the gospel, because people better start figuring this out sooner rather than later, because there's all kinds of information flowing out there. Okay, hypothetical situations, logical conclusions that, you know, the timing of this and tying it in with, you know, the establishment or the un-American genocidal complex are trying to get rid of one Donald John Trump from the office of the presidency. And they're failing quite miserably. As we've discussed, remember on past shows, you know, we talked about Job chapter 12 and how I read that chapter over and over. I mean, we had a show months ago, but and how I told you, I said I'm positive that the idiots pursuing Donald Trump are as stupid and incompetent and as nervous as they seem. And Nancy Pelosi gets up there and stutters and this and that, and you know, it just looks like a total buffoon in front of 200 million people. It's not an accident, okay?
Right.
What I'm saying is that effort to get rid of Trump, the legitimate way, or some. Has apparently failed, and I'm talking hypothetical. This is purely speculation on my part, and reading other articles and stuff, is that now they've taken it up a notch, and you know, now you know if this virus gets bad enough, or even nearly bad enough, and they start talking about medical martial law and overriding.
Oh jeez, oh no. Oh my gosh,
and this sort of thing. Plus, don't forget mass death. Okay, the Georgia Guidestones. All right, you know, and the people talking about, you know, clearing the earth of 90% of its population, which is in stone. It's literally etched in stone, by the way, which you really read the Bible, you know, the parentheses is really the mark of the beast. When you should go back and go through Strong's Concordance and do the research. The mark of the beast is, again, it's much more than some silly microchip, you know, with 666, you know, stamped in people's foreheads. But anyway, if you go read the Georgia Guidestones, it talks about reducing the world's population by 90%. The Georgia Guidestones, whose date just so happens to be March 22nd, 1980, or 322, the 322 of Skull and Bones, you know, Skull and Bones Society, which just so happens to be the most powerful organization in the United States, if not the world, as, you know, it includes presidents, major corporations, the United Nations and whatnot, and its alumni. It all kind of comes together at a point, okay? So what I'm saying is that this bunch, the shadow government, you know, even Fox News now calls the deep state. I think they've taken it up a level, and you know, you got medical martial law. Again, you got the population reduction of the earth by several billion people. And if people think that's, you know, I'm being right. overreacting. I mean, just look at history. Look at Mao. Look at Stalin. Look at Hitler.
Exactly. It's crazy. You know? It's absolutely crazy. And we'll see what happens. If this was the way they had to step it up to eliminate our freedom, you predicted it, Rob, first, here on the Rob Roselli Show, that this was going to happen in your books. And it came true based on this. And we'll find out.
I don't want to be very careful. I mean, I don't know exactly how, but certainly the pattern I've documented, and again, in the un-American genocidal complex, and I am, you know, just based on Revelation 17 and 18, you know, an attack on the United States, I could not really see exactly what that would be. I still think there's a very quick EMP or nuclear strike in our future. Unfortunately, I hate to say it, but who's to say with China and the trade war, who's to say if this isn't on purpose? I don't know. Okay, again, you can only go so far down the rabbit hole. All I know is this is not natural. There's a lot more going on here, and I suggest people figure this out sooner rather than later. You can take trust in your leaders, okay, your so-called leaders, who in many cases are literal devil worshippers. And I'm not saying that to be funny, or I mean, I'm saying that literally, okay, and that's documented in Section 3 of my first book, They Live, on my site. But anyway, or you can take solace in the King James Bible with the creator.
All right. Well, awesome. So,
universe.
So boxofsunglasses.com for more information. Great topic today, Rob. Come up with some of that stuff again, because you've heard it here first here on the Rob Roselli Show. This is a man-made virus. All right. Take care, Rob. I appreciate it.
That's all the evidence, Neil. Thanks again. I'll talk to you soon.
All right, Rob. Bye. Take care. Bye-bye. All right. That was Rob Roselli Show, everyone.
Talk about one of the people that I've included in my book, Freedom from Addiction 3. His name is Hogg Mandino, and he's written a lot of books, maybe over 10. He wrote The Greatest Salesman in the World, which contained time-tested wisdom of the ancients distilled into 10 simple scrolls. And those scrolls were turned into affirmations. Now, what is an affirmation? An affirmation is to declare or maintain something to be true. An affirmation is the declaration itself, either verbalized or merely thought. A prayer is the expression of thoughts, hopes, or needs to God. Therefore, an affirmation directed toward God is a prayer. And if prayer is infused with belief, and if the belief is strong enough, it's answered. Prayers could be good or bad. And if we believe in them, they are answered.
Yes.
This is one of the reasons it's better to have good thoughts coming from you than destructive bad thoughts. So Mandino started out as a dyed-in-the-wood alcoholic. And one night, he went to a pawn shop to buy a gun, I believe, to kill himself. And you can read about that story. He's got a great, great story. But he didn't, and actually he went on to write 10 or more books. So his philosophical message was that every person on earth is a miracle.
Yes.
And should choose to direct their lives with confidence and congruency to the laws that govern abundance. Mandino wrote some of the best motivational books that I've ever heard. And as a public speaker, he was undeniably one of the best. I watched him do a keynote once, and he had the longest standing ovation of anybody that I've seen in my life. So some of his other books were The Greatest Salesman in the World, The Greatest Secret in the World, The Greatest Miracle in the World, and A Better Way to Live. Well, A Better Way to Live had 17 different things that he thought that we should be doing. And he gave me permission to turn these into affirmations. So when you affirm these 17 things,
yes,
and you affirm them 2-3 times a day with enthusiasm, it changes your thoughts. And as your thoughts change, so does your life. So I want to present these 17 Mandino affirmations from my most recent book on addiction, which is Freedom from Addiction 3. So here we go.
Yes. I mean, when that's great, and I cannot wait to hear those affirmations, because when we have positive thoughts, we will be more willing to put the work in, to be pleasure to people and be happier. Because if we're not happy, our work is going to suffer because of it.
Absolutely.
All right. I can't wait to hear them. So go ahead and tell me them, Wynn.
Okay. So here are the 17 rules from Mandino's book, A Better Way to Live. And I won't rush through them. I want to give you a chance to think about it, but I can't spend a lot of time on them. So you just have to get them.
We have before us the opportunity to forge a new world order.
There is a man behind the curtain. This isn't the Wizard of Oz. The shakeup to the music business machine.
That sounds fun!
This is a far more deadly predator than anyone ever imagined.
Perfectly designed.
I wonder which came first.
CyberStation USA.
CyberStation USA is the future of radio. Get your business into the online future at the world's largest internet radio station. From banner placement on our homepage to any of our broadcaster stages, commercials on our video player, audio spots on any of our shows, or at the beginning of any of our on-demand broadcasts. CyberStation USA offers competitive rates with a worldwide reach, a fully integrated one-stop-shop social media broadcast platform. For more information, please contact our sales department at cameo@cyberstationusa.com.
Cameo Entertainment Group and CyberStation USA are now part of Stitcher, a free radio app for your smartphone. With Stitcher, you can listen to live programming as well as archive radio programming right on your phone. To obtain Stitcher, just go to the App Store for your particular phone. Go to search, then type in Stitcher. That's Stitcher. S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
Then download. It's that simple.
Stitcher,
a free radio app for your smartphone. Convenient access to live and archive CyberStation USA programming on your mobile phone. That's Stitcher.
S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.
CyberStation USA. Always on the go.
Every so often you have technology come along that rewrite the rules of the game.
Digital culture isn't characterized by the home computer.
You speak instantly to a man standing on the shore of France.
The CyberStation, the USA, the .com.
Worldwide.
Everything has changed.
A new age.
The biggest ride in all of history.
This is CyberStationUSA.com.
Worldwide.
This is the future.
The future.
Radio.
The future.
The future of radio.
And that really is the message.